Welcome everybody to the plunge meditation session number 5. I think everybody's had at least one session, right? How to regard this thing we're doing? I always have that question, like, how useful is this? I don't really know, but I know it's enjoyable, and I'm thinking that sometimes our spiritual work becomes kind of focused on the hard part of you know, our histories and our injuries and stuff like that. And I think it's good to balance that a little with just interesting and enjoyable things as well, to open those paths so that it's not all just like struggling to get better. There's ways of just, you know, having a better time of life and enhancing our capacity to enjoy as well. And so I think of these as a form of kind of sophisticated enjoyment, in the sense that they're really deep, like, inner things, but that they're intriguing in a way, and they may actually plant a seed or open up something for you. And if that's the case, that's great. But hopefully that would be kind of enjoyable overall, you know, that's kind of like seeing something new or seeing something deeper, unfolding something, you know, I don't know. So I've selected another small set of these plunges, and a few of them are repeats, because I asked people, you know, if they had any favorites to let me know. I didn't get much feedback on that. So a few of them are repeats, and then there are a few new ones. And then, of course, these come from that paper that I wrote. Anybody who wants to do these and want to know about, you know, I have a thing that's a description. And so if you want to do these with other people, or, you know, form a group or do it on your own, there's information, plenty of information about it. It's actually pretty simple. I mean, 1 minute plunge, what could be, how much could you say, you know? It's not a lot. Let me just go over the structure of it so that we're all on the same page. First thing is that we're here together to do this, and so this is a kind of a sangha. One of my friends pointed out this is the kind of a sangha scene, and that has a lot of supportive energy so that we can focus on this stuff. And the first thing is to talk a little about the theme or the topic that we're going to plunge on, so that we don't have a feeling like we don't know what the heck we're doing. So I like to talk about it, and I'm the one talking mostly about it, because these are the ones that meant something to me. And so it's what I meant when I wrote down what the topics were. So I want to really explain that and kind of open up this subject a little bit. So there's like a couple of minutes of a talk around each topic. So we're all kind of on the same page. And we're not off in the weeds somewhere doing something else. That's the beginning thing, is that there'd be a few minutes of talking about the subject. Then there's these the pre-plunge practice, which is kind of collecting together your energies in the area of the body. Well, they say body, speech, and mind are the kind of classical divisions that you see in spiritual work. Body, speech, and mind. You ever see that? People talk about it in descriptions of meditative practices. They talk about body, speech, and mind. And so they, over a period of centuries, they know that the body is very influential in how your meditation goes. And so they've come up with a kind of like, it's kind of converged over a couple thousand years, that, you know, you sit with your body in a certain posture and with a certain kind of relaxation. And it's really important to have your breathing open. and that your body is balanced and it's not a big distraction to you. And that if you're laying kind of horizontal, you tend to, your mind tends to submerge down and you don't get as much clarity, or you tend to fall asleep or something. If you're all hunkered over, maybe it's like a depressed person, the energies of your body get tangled in that and not open. So one of the things we do is make the body support the meditation and use your intuition and your self-knowledge to know what works for you the best. And it generally converges upon those pictures of people meditating that you've seen forever, right? On the tankas or in the books and everything, they're sitting up in there. And sometimes they have funny mudras, their fingers and things. I don't know how important that is for each person, but whatever. Use your own intuition on that. But definitely I do get channels and energy flows and things like that are really important. Open the chest is important. Relaxed diaphragm. Some people carry a lot of energy in their throat. You want to make sure that, you know, you're doing something that opens that up. And a lot of people carry stuff in their face as well. That's the body part. The speech part is... some people have a very dominant conceptual mind process going, lots of thinky-thinky, inner dialogue, conceptual heaviness, you know, bound into conceptual things where the only thing is real is what I can talk about. And what you want to do is let that speech part get out of the way enough so that you can just experience a pure experience without a lot of conceptual overlays. So we're not in these things, we're not trying to figure things out. We're not trying to articulate them necessarily. We're just trying to experience them, just purely experience them. Just like if somebody touches your toe, there's an experience before you say anything about it, before you have any attitude, there's a thing where it just happens for you. And so what you want to do is just see what happens for you without it being a thinky thing. So that's the speech part. It doesn't mean that you can't then wrap your conceptual mind around it later, but in that moment, you want to be open to a more direct experience of what goes on. And since you're not trying to analyze or conceptualize or have a right answer, all you can do is see what occurs when you set out to experience this thing in the 1 minute meditation. You know, just to see what happens. It's not like to know some ultimate truth even. It's just see what happens. So the inherent in that is like a sense of real openness. A sense of just pure experience, see what goes on, so that it becomes self-knowledge in a way. What happens when you engage this subject? What does actually occur? If you're in an enlightenment intensive or a Zoom dyad retreat, that's that contemplation element, is that sense of innocent, pure openness to what actually occurs, right? Without wrapping a story around it too quickly. All right. So that's the speech part. And then the mind part, body, speech, mind, the three, the mind has to do with being really present for that occurring. In other words, to be here, one-pointedly, showing up for it, undistractedly. Mind is being fully open and present, you know what I mean? Being with this moment as it occurs, fully and unabashedly engaged in some way. So that's a part of that sort of plungy quality. There's a sense of like really being fully with what you do, what you're doing at that moment. And that's the mind part. So a body, speech, and mind. Okay. I think that's what those guys are teaching when they teach body, speech, and mind in various other disciplines, that kind of thing anyway. Everybody says things differently, you know, but that's how it's coming out of me at this moment, so whatever. So then you do the 1 minute plunge. So I'll ring the bell. I have a bell here, and I'm gonna test it, okay, because sometimes these computer things are daunting. Okay, let's see, 1 minute gone. Can you hear that? Is it loud enough? It's about right? Okay, I'll stop it. That lasts for 1 minute, yeah? Yeah, okay. So, I'll ring that bell. And then there'll be a minute in which you do all that, this thing, to whatever way it hits you, and in the moment, you are open to that experience that comes up when you engage this topic. And it's wide open at that point. It's whatever happens for you. And my description of it shouldn't dominate it necessarily. What I want to do is, when I talk about it, I don't want to impress upon you a way of thinking about it. I want to see if you can find that thing that seems to be what I'm talking about in you. You know what I mean? So it's your own experience. It's not me laying a trip on you. So if it's really different and you wouldn't put it the way I put it, fine, right? It's wide open that way. I'm not trying to impress upon you any my thing. It's a really funny thing if I talk about it, because I am trying to do that, but I'm trying not to do that at the same time. If you know what I mean? I want us to be together on it, but at the same time, I want that ultimate freedom within you to have your own take on it and see it in a way that's your own. So I don't know how to do that except to say it that way. You know what I mean? That I got to... You understand, don't you? There's this inherent ambiguity in that, but my intent is not to put my thought on you, but to put my thought on you at this in my own, you know, okay, so you got that. So there's that. Okay, so then we do that for a minute and the bell rings, and so you don't have to worry about the time at all. The bell will ring for you. And then there's the post 1 minute plunge process. And what that is you don't chop it off. What you do is you reflect on what happened by doing that. You see what happened. It's not like you have ideas about it necessarily. You just get what you got. So this is, there's another level on it in a sense, is you see what occurred by doing that. And you let it kind of sink in some way. I don't know, whatever that means to you, that you let it kind of sink in. You see what that's about for you. And you maybe just a minute of that, you know, or two, while it's still very fresh. And so I'll leave a little bit of time afterwards so that you can, like, see what happens. So you're not really doing the plunge at that time. You're seeing the effect of the plunge on yourself. And maybe something that you've learned, or something that an insight, or maybe it just threw you into a helpless confusion. And that's just the truth. It threw you into helpless confusion. That's where you're at with that. So, you know, that's the truth. And then if you want to journal about that a little bit, go ahead. You know, you can write something down. Some people like to do that. It's completely optional. And that's the story. We'll do that. And then we'll, I think doing two makes sense, doing it twice. The first time because it's so new, which has its virtues, actually, because it's new. And then you can maybe go deeper the second time, because it's already a little bit familiar. And there's something about it being familiar. Some channels have opened, and now you can really go on those channels or something. So I'm thinking maybe doing it twice is useful. But we'll just do two. And I have about, I think there's one, two, three, four, five, six, 7 of them today. That might be too much. We'll see how it goes. I'd like to have it end before the full 2 hours because some people find them tiring, and I want to make this more pleasurable than exhausting. But you do it whatever way feels right to you. Let me see. Is there anything else I should say about this before we start? Maybe just to point out that some people like to fiercely engage in the one-minute plunge with a willful, intentional go for it, you know? And so that they use the will to, and if I suppose that if your mind wanders off the subject easily, there may be a virtue in making sure that you can willfully attend to this and drag yourself back, you know, intentionally and really push for something. And the other side would be those who don't have that as a major thing and like you surrender into an experience, which is a non-willful side of it. You know what I mean? There's those two general approaches in contemplative arenas. One is a very willful, penetrating, a sword that cuts through illusion and, you know, gets to the heart of it, which is cool. And the other one would be one in where you release into it and like fall into an open allowing the truth of that to come out from the divine or something, you know. I was talking with a friend the other day and he says, yeah, sometimes you go after the divine, like, you know, or the ultimate willfully and you reach out and touch, and the other time it's such a blessing to have that other come to you. Okay, chess tournament. Use your own intuition of what works best for you and discover that for yourself. Okay, the first one is kind of the one that I think is useful for everybody every time, and it's that pure awareness aware of itself. And what that means is that you have this basic awareness. I'm not talking about an exalted state necessarily, but just that you are aware at this moment. You are aware of what's around you. You're aware of your thought. You're aware of your feeling. Something. You're aware of something. And so what you want to do is detach awareness from what it is aware of and be aware of the awareness itself, which is the underlying faculty that makes awareness of the world possible, that you're a sentient being, that you can experience. And so what you're wanting to do is detach, not so much like if you look at the bookcase, it's not so much about the bookcase, it's about the fact that you can have an experience of the bookcase, right? So it's not, the bookcase is not the focus, it's the awareness is the focus. Do you follow that? That's a very basic principle. If you can get that so that there's no bookcase at all, there's just pure awareness aware of itself, that's what we're going for, right? Is pure awareness being in this moment aware of itself. Does that make sense? It's an immediacy of the fact that you are acknowledging that it is an experience you are having subjectively, whatever it is. And it's that it's noticing the subjectivity of subjectivity is another way of saying it, that you're a conscious being, okay? Or that you have consciousness. I'm saying you're a conscious being, I'm saying, you know, whatever. Body, so get your body ready. And make sure that you have all the channels open to you and that you are relaxed and that you're taking full advantage of the fact that your body is not a distraction or a limitation to the best of your ability, right? And that speech is you're going to just have an experience. You're not going to figure it out. And that you're going to be really, really present in the moment to really dive in to a plunge. For 1 minute, you're going to have fullness of the experience of awareness, pure awareness, being aware just of itself. Got it? Already? Begin. Just let that, just notice what occurred by doing that. Give it a moment so you sense the nature of that. If you want to write something down, feel free to do that. It's completely optional, but sometimes I think it's nice to look back on these things and see where you were at that time. Part of the things I was into was this, the way the nerve system works, and there's this neuroplasticity, they call it, which is where your brain makes different connections, synapses and new dendrites. Some dendrites kind of retract and some connect in, and synapses move around and reconnect, and the values at each synapse change, so they're more conductive or more resistive. And all those neural nets form around that, so that these experiences, deep experiences, change your brain. That's all I'm saying. So that means that the states that you experience become more accessible as experiences because those channels are open. You know what I mean? So if you build on wonderful, sweet experiences, the likelihood of your having a wonderful, sweet experience is increased. It just seems sort of more or less logical. So it's nice to have great positive experiences so that they're more accessible to you. In these areas, it's just full of undefined or vaguely defined terms. And to communicate, to get understanding between people on these areas is really hard. And I've been watching these scientists, and you can see some people have had self-enlightenment experiences, and some of the scientists haven't. And you can see how they argue about the interpretation of the results of their experiments and why they're at conflict is because they haven't had those experiences. You know what I mean? They haven't. When you introspect, you also change the nature of your awareness as the outcome of your inquiry. And it builds a different sense of things. You know what I mean? The knowledge of inner experience shifts how you take things. And so if you haven't had that, you take it one way. If you have had these experiences, you take it another way. Your reality changes. So these are enlightenment processes, and they shift how things seem to you on a very deep visceral level. And so the language that we use to make that depends a lot on what experiences we've had, how we take things. So you got what I said because I said it in a way that was real to you, and so that's cool. You know, it was a bit of success. But it's just fraught with a lot of misunderstandings. Like the people who are saying there's no self and the people who are saying this, there's only the self, are saying this, but are saying the same thing. And it's really hard to see that. You know what I mean? Anyway, let's do this again. Pure awareness, aware only of itself. See where that intention takes you. So maybe take a breath. Remember to check to see if your body is giving you the right kind of support, you know. And make sure that these things we just talked about, let them go. Because you're going to just have a pure experience. Be really present in this moment for this experience. We're going to do a plunge and get ready, because here we go. You ready? Get really right on the edge of your diving board to dive in. Begin. see what going there did this time. Okay. There was a while back I was studying with this Bon Dzogchen master, Tenzin Wangyal. He was giving a course on Dzogchen from the Bon tradition. And Bon's the old religion that predates Buddhism in Tibet. And it got sort of converted into Buddhism over the years. And the Dzogchen tradition, Dzogchen is like the most kind of esoteric part of Buddhist philosophy, sort of. Some people regard it as that. Anyway, there was this guy called a Karmapa, who is the Dalai Lama level guy in the Kagyu tradition of Vajrayana Buddhism, the Buddhist, those guys. And his teacher had a center. He had a place in Austin, Texas, and I had published some stuff on awareness, and they were using the thing I wrote up at Trengu Rinpoche. His name was Trengu, a very amazing teacher. He's written some books. You should check out his stuff. People at his ashram kind of hated him, but he really was a great teacher. But the head of that little ashram in Austin, Texas, used my stuff to teach their students. I was so proud, you know, my ego went about that. But he sent me, or in our dialogue, he showed me some of the other teachings. And one of them was this really cute thing, and I wanted to share it with you. And I'll read it to you, and then let's just try it and see what it does. It's called increased alertness. Okay, that's the next one. It's number 23 on the list. Increase your alertness to a certain level. And here's the level that they did. It's walking on a narrow plank 1 or 2 feet above a stream. That's the level of alertness that he was encouraging. Right? Imagine that you're walking on a thin, like a 2x4 or something, above 1 or 2 feet above a stream. It's like, it's not super dangerous. It's not like a scary alertness where you would fall, you know, into the abyss. But it's not just step off and step back on. There's a sort of an alertness. What would it be like to be that alert? To be that present and that, it, you know, on top of the moment, so to speak. I think that we have that accessible to us through just basically doing it. When I did it, I could get the sense of it. So sometimes when you're meditating, you want to be alert. So this is the ability to be more alert in the moment, that you have the capacity to be more alert. You know what I mean? That you can just be more alert. So one way to do it is this image or this level of alertness that would be characterized by walking on a plank over this stream, 1 or 2 feet above the stream, above the water. Okay, so see if you can attain what to you would be that level of alertness for 1 minute, solid 1 minute, to see if you can move into that quality of alertness of consciousness, alertness of awareness, alertness of being. Let's just see where that takes us. It's a kind of a novel idea, perhaps, but just see how that works for you, okay? Let's give it a try. So get your body nice and settled. Do body, speech, and mind. Do it at your own pace and in your own way, because you know what I'm talking about. Don't forget to relax. You can be relaxed and alert at the same time. Okay, ready? So, okay, get really present for this. And so you're going to be in a state of increased alertness, right, to a certain level. Okay, so see if you're more alert. Wow, I really got off on that one for some reason. I did it with you, and phew, that one's really a trip. If you find the right channel, that one really does something. It like made me realize, I don't know. Maybe we'll just let it sit for a while. It was really good though. There's a access to your brain stem somehow. You know, alertness comes from this the medulla oblongata areas and things. Yeah, if you run out of coffee. And I suppose it's enlightenment intensive or one of these deep meditation things that you start to, you know, start to get sleepy. If you had that channel open, maybe some remedy in there. Okay, let's do this again and really jump right into it. Just really find that channel that unfolds this vitality, this alertness, this presence, this, you know. All right, here we go. So get ready. Okay. Wow, that really gets me high. That's from this group. They're no longer there. It's called Vajra Vidya or something like that. Vajra Vidya group in Austin, Texas. Came up with that one. From the Trungpa Rinpoche lineage. The Kagyus. There's like five major Tibetan Buddhist lineages. Mahamudra, that's the Kagyus. All right. If you want to write something down, you can. The next one, and this is one that we've done before, it was probably, a lot of people said, oh, they really like this one. It's a here and now experience. So it has to do with being present in the now. So it has this element of being now. There's this unfolding moment that's occurring all the time. There's this moment, and there's the next moment. Oh, next moment. Oh, the next moment. Oh, the next moment. You're in the now, but the moments are moving along, right? And we're on this, imagine being on the leading edge of the unfolding now. That's the idea of it. If you were as close to the edge of where the future becomes the now, that's a funny thing, but that's the meditation. In other words, it's like noticing the newness, the novelty of the next instant, the novelty, the ingression of novelty. There's this guy, Terence McKenna, who is a really colorful figure, and he talks about the ingression of novelty, that there's novelty at every moment. There's a freshness of every moment. There's a newness, this moment, next moment, next moment. So what you want to do is lean into the unfolding of the next moment while being in the now. It's life change. It's the tick of the clock, so to speak. It's the next tick. It's to be right at the point where the next tick of the clock happens. It seems more analog than that. It's not a tick, 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 right? But it's like leaning into this ingression of novelty. Ingression means coming in. So it's coming into your experience, the freshness, the immediacy, the freshness of the now that you are experiencing, as opposed to an old stale now that you might be hanging out in, which is like, oh, it's the same old thing all the time. It's the razor's edge. It's that immediacy. The unfolding moment, the newness, a new mind leaning into the newness of the new moment. I'm gonna try that. It's to see where that takes you, that idea. See what happens when you open to that kind of an experience, the ingression of novelty, being on that leading edge and staying right on that leading edge as much as you can. Okay, so body, speech, mind. Get ready. See what happens. See what that's like for you. These things are ways of seeing into how you experience the moment in a way. Like very similar experiences taken from a little different angle, a little bit different wrapping of possibilities of these different ways of experiencing things. And so it informs you as to the qualities of mind that are available to you. You know what I mean? That you can access. We tend to get in a rut sometimes and kind of live in a kind of constrained reality where we always think the same way. So in a way, this like opens another channel and allows you to have a fresh experience, perhaps, or something. So that's what I like about these. It's just like these little things that say, what about that? You know, and it's just like, but it's not just a verbal thing where you go, yeah, that sounds interesting. It's like you go dive into it and really like touch it in a way. And I think that's what's the value of doing a whole minute of like really focusing on something. It's like it opens it, you know, and gives you that little touch. It's marvelous to be alive. And there are many options of internal, experience that enrich the field of experience. And I think that some of these have promise in enriching that inner field, you know, opening it up, making it more interesting, more enjoyable, more to realize the truths and to realize the nature of mind has so much more to offer than the sort of dogged states we sometimes get into. Let's do that one more time and see where it takes us. Lean into the unfolding moment, right? Just be, so everybody can kind of get, I think, a sense of being here, present in a now, right? It's an interesting illusion of being now, and then just watch what happens when you pay attention to the unfolding of the next moment, leaning into that. Okay, so get ready, body, speech, and mind. And if you're getting tense and you're struggling with it, you know, just enjoy it a little bit. Just see where it takes you more than trying to accomplish something. All right, here we go again. You ready? Okay, that's that. That's what happens when you do that. So this one is a new one. Okay, I'll just describe it. So what we do is, this is about your memory. First thing you need to have is a memory of something that happened recently. It could be earlier today, it could be what just happened, it could be yesterday. It doesn't have to be a recent memory, but it has to be a concrete memory of something that happened, right? Something that happened. And it has to be sort of concrete thing so you can kind of hold it as a thing rather than a long thing, you know? It's got to be an event like you got in the car and slammed the door, you know, or you went to the Starbucks, whatever it is, okay? And the quest, and here's the essence of the inquiry, it is the essence of the plunge, is when you experience that memory, what about it makes you think that it actually happened? What is the quality of that memory that makes it seem to you, that's convincing to you, that it actually happened? there's something about it. Like you can just imagine something in your mind and you know it didn't actually happen. But there's something about it that's a feeling or something. Well, what I want you to do is to see what it is that convinces you that it actually happened. Okay? So with that, see just what that experience is. See what you get from that. And see where it takes you. Okay? So there's something that distinguishes what actually happened and what didn't happen. What is that? Right? What is that inner experience? So, okay, get your body, speech, and mind prepared. And plunge into that one and just find a memory. You want to have an object here that, because it'll represent the entire issue, right? So you just pick a memory that is solid, you know, a solid memory, one that's real to you. And see where that inquiry takes you. I hope it doesn't mess you up. You know, it's like your epistemology just crumbles with this one. Okay, here we go. You ready? Take a deep breath, you know, get settled. Here we go. We're going to plunge into that. What about a memory makes it seem like it actually happened? Okay, so let that one sink in. So that's an intriguing one for me. I think as I get older, that quality seems to be fading a little. You know, it's not as solid. Nature of the plunge was find something that to you is a memory that is really a solid memory of something that actually did occur for you. It's got to be something that's kind of, you know, really something that occurred, like you just sat down, you know, or something you did yesterday, or what you had for breakfast. It doesn't matter what the memory is, but have something that to you is a nice solid memory. What about that experience of that memory makes you think that it actually happened? You can tell the difference between just an imagination of something happening and something that really happened. And that's the distinction you want to make, is the something that did happen, right? What is that feeling? What is that thing that is so convincing to you? What is the actual experience that gives it that conviction? That's an aspect of mind. I mean, it's something that we have every day. It's very common. It's totally ordinary. It's what you live through, right? That happened yesterday. It really did, you know, that. What about that memory gives it that sense of certainty? That sense of conviction that it really did happen. What is that? Sense that essence, the sense that thing that makes it that way for you. All right? See if you can tune in on that particular element of memory. Okay? So, 1 minute plunge meditation. Remember, body, speech, and mind. So you get your body in a place that supports your being in a plunge. Get out of your conceptual thinky part of your mind and just experience that feeling, that intuition, that whatever you call that thing that gives that credibility. All right? And be right present with that in this moment. And ready? We're going to do another 1 minute. Here we go. What makes a memory seem like it really did happen? Okay, let that inquiry sink in a moment. See what happened when you made that inquiry. What was your reaction to doing that? How is it now for you?
So I noticed something that gives me the experience that it really happened. First, it was that what I was doing in the memory, I had an intention of doing it. And then I remembered just being there in the doing of what I remembered as I was there. I was there doing it. You said that it makes it real, seem real, but then that's not real. It seems real. It makes it seem real. Just because I remember it, it's not real.
Well, so just write that stuff down. Just write that stuff down. Just, yeah. It opens up this interesting quality of what's all this about? You know, like, what creates a reality for us? It sort of enters into that realm.
I noticed that I started remembering it, and then I started reliving it, and that became like the framing of a building, and I could just watch my mind creating details to furnish the house, sort of, you know, to kind of fill it in. Well, now it was clear to me that wasn't so real. That was me making it up.
Right, but yeah. You get the sense that something did happen.
Yes.
No matter how you remember it, no matter how you conjure it into the pictures of your mind and the characteristics and the meanings and significances, that somehow it seems like it actually did happen. However you image it, however you remember it. And memories are notoriously bad in representing. I mean, you have five different people will give you different accounts of the same event, right? So there's that. But that something actually happened for every person. And it's that essence that we're focusing on. Let's take a break. Let's just say it's 17 after now. How about 10:27. We'll give it a whole 10 minutes. You get a stretch, you get a glass of water, relax, and we'll meet back here in 10 minutes, and we'll do something again. Okay, thank you all for doing this with me, and we'll continue. This was a 10-minute break. Okay, welcome back. Hope everybody's here. I see a lot of blanks, but I'm going to assume everybody's here. So, next one is get the idea of not having to be anybody. And what that is this idea that, like, pretty much all the time, we have varying degrees of feeling that we have to be a certain way or be somebody to others, especially, that we have to have a presentation, that we have to appear to be somebody. And that somebody, you know, could have all sorts of details in terms of our personalities and our dispositions, you know, predispositions of, from our experience, solutions to relationship issues and ways of being and wanting to impress and all the rest, you know, our personalities. And see what it's like to have completely let go of having to be anybody in particular or to have any characteristics that you assign to being you. You know what I mean? It's just like, imagine not having to be any particular person, any particular way, right? Find that place where you're so, I don't know what it is. You just don't have to be somebody. You know what I mean? You don't have to impress. You don't have to convince anybody. You don't have to get you across. Imagine that state that you could be in where you're free of all of that. Just plunge into that as an experiment, so to speak. That of not having to be any particular person, right? Any particular way, to make any kind of impression, to be regarded as somebody one way or another. So that's it. You just get that idea of, and it's more than just getting the idea of it, is going to that place where you don't have to be anybody. See where that takes you. It'll mean something to you. Maybe it's different from the way it means it to me. I don't know. But you don't have to be anybody. If you're trying to be somebody, stop that for just a minute and just plunge into that. You got that? See where that particular framing of the mind, where that brings you, where that takes you. Not having to be anybody and experience that. Okay, so get settled. Nice, solid body situation. Nice, clear. Open all those channels up. Be relaxed. Try to find if there's any tensions that you're holding. Just see if you can let those go a little bit. Don't try to figure this out. Just see where this goes when you open to not being anybody at all. And be really right here, present, fully engaged in this moment, to this plunge into what it's like to not be anybody. Okay? So see where that little mini journey took you. Just kind of reflect on where you went with that. Okay, if you want to write something down, go ahead. Let's try that again. So there's a sense of having to be somebody or wanting to be somebody, to be known as somebody. And what if that was just not there? What if that wasn't there? What would that be? What would result from that in terms of your inner state to your conscious state? What would that be like to not have to be somebody? Right? All right. Are you ready? Present? Ready to go? Right. Not having to be anybody. We're just going to do a couple more here, so and we'll call it a day. This one's kind of finding a state that you could be in which you are most open to others, most open to another or others. And, you know, that varies from time to time. It generally varies in how you regard others, what judgments you make about them. But imagine, if you will, a possible state in which you are maximally open to others. I suppose it has a lot to do with you and your willingness to experience. And it probably has to be maximally open to another. It probably means that it's not going to be contingent about how they are, right? I would expect that it's on you. To be maximally open to another would mean that it's not so much about the other, but about you. So it would be that your own personal state of openness to others, I guess unconditionally open would be a way of characterizing it. What would that be like? If you flooded your consciousness with that utterly open place, if you flooded your whole being with that, where there's no refusal of the other, no denial of relationship, just imagine what that would be for you. And I don't know what that would be for you, but it would be on your end. I guess it wouldn't depend on whether they were attractive or not attractive, or they were good or bad or anything. Still, there would be this possibility. What would that be? I saw just like What would that state be if you happened to find yourself in that state? What would it actually be? And so that's the plunge. That's the next plunge. Do you get that? Is that what it would be like to be really open? Just really open to the other. Open to whatever the other means to you. Whatever that means to you, what another is. I'm thinking of another being, another person, more than anything. But I suppose it could be any otherness. I'm not sure. Depends on how otherness plays in your own mind. Just see what it would be like to be really, 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 ultimately, to the maximum amount of openness. And just let that for a moment flood you, flood through your nerve system. You don't have to do it. You don't have to commit to that and all the consequences that might come from that. You just don't worry about the consequences. You're just going to just touch into that state for a moment as an experience. Then you can do whatever you want. I mean, it's not like a commitment to being open, right? All right, so here we are. Get ready, settle, be nice and relaxed, head balanced, be ready to have an experience. Just see what that would be like to go to that place of being totally open to others. Okay. Just see what came up for you around that. Let that sink in a little bit. If you manage some degree of openness, to kind of savor that a little maybe, just kind of see what that feels like. Or see what came up for you, maybe that has meaning or something. It's kind of interesting. There's an underlying assumption that by choosing or by intending, by just willingness, you can have a intentionally open to a particular state or way of being. Do you know what I mean? It's like a skill that within the domain of your own mind, you can make choices about and actually like create a state, an inner state that, I mean, in a way that not many people are familiar with that concept, that you can actually move your awareness from the way you are, like that intentionally, like you have the ability to actually create a different place of being inside. Some states seem really reluctant to budge, even when you intend to be in a different place, like they're stuck hard, you know? But that ultimately, there is that capacity to move awareness from one state to another, where you can create out of nothing, sort of out of, how, I don't know how it works exactly, but you can move into another place. And it's a skillful means of navigating your own reactivity, in a sense, to be able to say, oh, there's that state. It's not my favorite state, so I think I'll move over to another place to be in a different relationship to that situation, right? And lots of times we don't grant ourselves that capacity, that ability to do that. And we're way out of practice, so it seems even like fanciful that you would even think that you could do such a thing, right? But that over a period of time, you can develop. I know that for a fact, because that was part of the work I did with Charles Brunner, that you could actually become the creative source of your own state and move from one state to another. And it's just so hard for people to conceive that that's even possible, especially when you're in the throes of a very strong state. You know, it doesn't seem real. But in fact, through cultivating a certain kind of awareness, you can move to another state. So a lot of these are kind of assuming that we have that, just sort of assume that you can do that. And so it might be difficult if you don't have that practice going, that you can move from one state to another. So though what happens in a one-minute plunge of meditation is you go, I don't know what to do, or something like that. But so I'm just sort of assuming that, yeah, you can do that. You know, like completely unreal about the actual situation some people are in. I find a state that is most open to others is a really nice one to at least entertain, you know, as a possibility. And because they really appreciate your being open to them as well. And it just, you know, enriches the field again. So let's see if we can do it again. Knowing full well that sort of a knack to it, maybe, or states have a kind of sticky quality. They're made of gluey substance. And there's a perspective where that glueiness goes away. States are just easy to move around in. Okay, let's do one more time. Let you finish writing if you got something going there. It's okay. Find the state that is the most open to others. There's a thing about it that it actually already exists. That's in us. It's not something you actually have to create. It's something that you move into. It already is there. That state is in you that you are really, you can be open to others. It's not something that needs to be manufactured out of nothing. It's already possibility. Here we go. Let's get that body nice and centered. Get your intellectual mind set aside a little bit to just have this pure experience of being really open to others. Maybe just leave it at that. It's 10 minutes to 11. Maybe we've done enough for one day. That's 1 minute plunging. So this is the fifth session we've done of this. I'm going to let it go for a while now because I want to focus on this other thing. And I wanted to do just a series of these, and maybe in the future we can get together and do these again, if there's an interest in doing them. But for now, I'm going to let them go. And I hope that, I really hope you, you know, you find them beneficial in some way, that they open up certain avenues in you, that they teach you something, that you enjoy them. I hope you enjoy them. That's the main thing. If you kind of get off on them, you know, that's cool stuff, you know. I mean, we have all these capacities in our mind to experience wonderful, marvelous, interesting things about ourselves and about our minds. So, you know, it's nice to tap into those things. And there's just lots of it around. So this is one way of, like, getting some of that. And all the resources you would need to do it on yourself, you know, do it yourself is at the website where I put all the recordings and everything. And I'm going to put the, it's www.sendoff.com/share.htm. That's where it all is. It's in your chat box. And I recorded this, and the new recording will be, you know, up there in a week probably or so. So if you want to listen to the talks on the ones you didn't come to, or the ones you just, if you just want, you know, whatever, they're available. So thank you all so much for doing this with me. I really enjoy it. I enjoy you. You're just lovely people. Gosh, what a nice thing to do. So let's do it in the future some another way, right? Let's see if we can make this happen. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you. It's been a real pleasure for me. A real pleasure.
Thank you, Edred.
Thank you so much, Edred.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Edred. Bye.
Okay.
Edred, thank you so much. I look forward to the next one.
Okay, cool. All right. Have a pleasant Saturday, and we'll see you another time. All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.